How can we make the world better? By making ourselves better. The Dr. Joe Show explores how you can make positive personal change by using his groundbreaking and highly effective I Am approach to understand who we are and why we do what we do. Your small changes can have big effects.
Join us now for the Dr. Joe Show with Mark Stiles of Stiles Law and your host, Dr. Joe Schrand.
Stretch the kindness, brush with madness. Is it sadness or just a show? Van Gogh.
Welcome to the Dr. Joe Show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the vibrato is fantastic, the fading, and the way you use the microphone by moving back. Audience, you didn't see that. He moves back to just sort of augment the fade of the voice. That's great. It's lovely. Thank you so much.
I wonder if it came through on radio. I hope so.
Vince.
Maren, did you hear me? Did you hear it? Yeah, listener Maren. Yeah. Shouting out my friend Maren. I know she's listening.
Good. It's always good to have some listeners. How have you been doing, Mark?
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah.
What's
Things
been
are
happening?
Progressing.
Yeah, good.
Things are happening. Spring is here. Spring has sprung. We in New England are ready to run.
I know, but you know, the other day, I was really surprised that there was no money on the ground because we had such a change in the weather.
Ha ha.
Yeah, thank you.
Ha ha.
Change in the weather.
You know, you're so witty. I love it. I love sharing time with you.
Thank you. It's really a pleasure. And your knee's doing okay? Things are getting back together?
Yeah. We had a huge breakthrough. Got full rotation around on a stationary bike, and it's made a tremendous amount of difference. Shout out to our friends at Peak Physical Therapy. Lynn Anderson has been pushing me, and I'm on a pace. I'm arguably breaking records. Bo Jackson don't know rehab, not compared to what we're doing over there at Peak Physical Therapy. Have you seen the 30 for 30 with Bo Jackson?
I don't think I have.
When he tore his hip completely off and then he went into this barbaric rehab. It's very motivational.
No, but it really is, you know, not just getting care from others, but it's also about self-care. Wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah.
And, with that in mind, I wonder whether you could introduce our guest for tonight.
I would be honored, Dr. Joe. Teresa Melito Connors, PhD, also known as Dr. MC, is the founder of Dr. MC's Self-Care Cabaret, a suite of theater-inspired self-care and professional development services for helping professionals. The Self-Care Cabaret encompasses workshops, a podcast, and educational curricula focused on accessible, realistic strategies that equip and empower. Dr. MC holds PhD in educational leadership from Lesley University, where her studies focused on self-care and renewal for helping professionals. Her true joy is bringing her scholarship, experience, and zest to audiences of all kinds nationwide. Dr. MC is a regular guest on high-profile podcasts and publications. She has a growing social community, so check her out at Dr. MC Self-Care on most of your social channels like Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. And guess what? She lives right here in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show, Dr. MC.
Thank you so much. What an intro. What a segue, Dr. Joe. That was great.
I'm learning. It's so good to see you again. Thanks for coming back on the show.
It's been like a year and a half, I think. That flew.
It's gone by so fast. What's been going on, Dr. MC? What have we been up to?
Goodness, we've been so busy. Let's see. This past, the last few months were, the fall, I should say, where it was a little rough. I ended up getting some sort of cold that turned into asthmatic bronchitis, and ended up, I was needing to use a nebulizer multiple times a day. And then around that same time, my body thought it would be really cool to experience gallbladder attacks for the first time. So I didn't even know what that was at first, other than incredible pain that was keeping me up at night. But then I got sick, so sick with the cold and the asthmatic bronchitis, so I couldn't even address the gallbladder issue and like get myself to the ultrasounds. Like it was a rough fall, but it did end in having gallbladder surgery in January, which was terrifying because I've never even had a cavity. So now I'm like, you're going to do what? I like this. I mean, I had a good relationship with the gallbladder for 40 years. I thought we were on good terms, and then it turned on me so quickly though. But we needed, we went through that. And so that was a little rough, but we're getting back on track though now, which is great. The recovery, knock on wood, has been smooth, and eating again and introducing foods back into the diet has also gone well. And I know it's a pretty common thing. A lot of folks have gallbladder removal surgery or experience issues, but it was new to me.
Isn't it weird when your body sort of betrays you like that? It's like, what did I do to you?
Oh, it was awful. And it was really, so I'll be honest, it was scary. I was terrified, but glad to be on the other side of it now and certainly feeling better. Navigating our healthcare system is always fun and all of that. But aside from all of that stuff, which is very important and definitely took the forefront, and the Dr. MC work ended up taking a little bit of a step back, but we've had some exciting things happen since I last saw you. Let's see, a couple notable ones being that I am launching my first online course in another week or so for teachers, for educators, on creating trauma-sensitive classrooms. Mm. And it is a 15-hour PDP course. So if you are an educator working towards renewing licensure or obtaining licensure in the state of Massachusetts or other states where you need to obtain, you know, a certain amount of professional development, this course would fit that. So that's pretty exciting. I am an approved PDP provider for the state. And we've had some other publications, most notable being ASCD's Ed Leadership Magazine. I had a big article in there, which was pretty exciting, and a couple of Edutopia pieces, which is also pretty cool. And one more thing, last summer, I decided to start, it was kind of selfish. I was feeling like I wanted to move more. And I grew up dancing. I have a professional performing arts background and dance background, which hence the self-care cabaret plays off of that. And I know, Dr. Joe, we share that kind of love of the performing arts and professional experience.
Absolutely.
But, you know, life gets in the way. So I really hadn't been moving enough. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to create something that'll help me move, because I wanted, you know, that right after school timeframe, you really can't find much that's not when a lot of, you know, Zumba classes or different things are going on in that like 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time range. So I created it. I created Dance Break with Dr. MC in their 30-minute virtual joyful movement dance parties, and for all bodies, because sometimes, especially when you live in a larger body, workout spaces and fitness spaces in the dance world aren't always welcoming places. Mm-hmm. So I've created a welcoming space for people, and it's free to join, and it's been seriously like the best 30 minutes of the week, and it's been fun.
That's great. That's self-care, you know, to the max there. That's fantastic. So how do people sign up for the online course,
for the PDP course?
Yeah, PDP is professional development, right?
Exactly, professional development points. So you can go to my website, drmcselfcare.com, and under the presentations tab, there's a special section that says online courses, and that'll take you to the information for the course. You can right now sign up for get information, because it's not quite live yet. But actually, if you sign up now, you'll save, there might be a discount coming to those folks in another week or so. I don't know. But it'll be live very soon, which I got some teachers piloting it right now that are, the feedback has been great. So I'm excited.
That's terrific. And that's trauma-informed care in the classroom.
Yeah. And how to create trauma center.
What's that going to look like?
Yeah. So it's really, you know, when we think about schools and communities, in an ideal world, a whole school would operate from a trauma-sensitive perspective, meaning that you're really in tune with making sure everybody has that sense of belonging and that they're not environments that cause harm. And sometimes education, the way it's just set up, it kind of inadvertently or unintentionally causes harm. And certain students, you know, there's a lot of research to back up kind of the trauma-sensitive perspective. And the thing that's really cool about it is it's good for all students. So it doesn't really matter if students have experienced trauma. Having the mindset as the teacher or the educator working with the students from that perspective is really helpful to really ground that sense of belonging, help students identify their island of competence and really feel good about themselves, make sure the environments are really predictable and free, not loud and chaotic, because that can be triggering to students. Really prioritizing relationships is another huge component, but also there's always an underpinning of self-care, because if the teacher or the educator isn't taking care of themselves, you can't care for others. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge piece of it. Like, you can't be a dysregulated, overwhelmed, stressed out teacher and expect to be effective in the classroom. You just can't. So the course, it's 15 hours, so it's lengthy, and we get into it. And we talk about navigating a crisis. We talk about academic instruction techniques. We talk about, obviously, self-care is a component. We also do a little bit into the brain science and actually like what trauma is and why it's so important to understand it and what it really can do to the body and how it can change brain development, hormone levels, epigenetics. We get in a little bit into like the generational transmission of trauma. So it's a pretty in-depth course.
That's so great. Yeah, we actually have a drug-free theater show based on ACEs, Adverse Childhood Experiences. Looks at the trauma of it. But the part that really gets me is I do not want to traumatize our sponsors, because they give us such a sense of belonging. So with that in mind, let's hear from our sense of belonging sponsors. Larry, we'll take a commercial break. We'll be right back with the Dr. Joe Show and Dr. MC.
Hey, folks. Thank you for listening to the Dr. Joe Show. We've been investigating whether or not we want to bring sponsors into our podcast. What are your thoughts? Do you know somebody who might be a good partner with the Dr. Joe Show, who may want to align their product or service with the Dr. Joe Show? Think about it.
We're back with the Dr. Joe Show with Dr. MC, and we're about to get into it. We're digging in. We're going to examine imposter syndrome and Dr. Joe. Can't wait. Stay tuned, listener.
Yes, we are indeed. Imposter syndrome, maybe imposter phenomenon. Dr. MC, interested in your thoughts. First, how did you get interested in this particular part of who we are as human beings?
Yeah. Well, I think it's something that, you know, probably a lot of people experience, whether they recognize it or can label it, or, you know, even know the term of what it is they're experiencing. But I feel like it's pretty common. And actually, how I got interested in it is kind of funny. I was doing one of the other things I've been working on is developing a curriculum for high school students called Be Your Own Bestie. And Bestie is an acronym that is a bunch of components that I think are really important. And we don't need to get into that. But I was teaching this course as kind of a pilot last year to a group of educators. And when I got to one of the I's, which is used to stand for invest and inspire, but I've actually shifted it to make it imposter syndrome, because somebody in the course asked me, how do you handle imposter syndrome? And on the spot, I was like, I'm not sure. I wanted to like think about that. And then the more I thought about it and realized how common it was, I ended up adding a section into the presentation the following week for folks because of that question that I got asked. So that's kind of where and then decided to actually change the framework of the curriculum to include it, because I think it's really important. And I'll admit it, like, I've experienced imposter syndrome before in my life, for sure.
So can you, just for our audience who may not know what it is, what have you learned? What is it? How would you define imposter syndrome, or now imposter phenomenon, I guess, so we don't pathologize it?
No. Yeah, I'm not familiar with it being called imposter phenomenon, but now I'm like, oh, gonna have to go look into that.
Yeah,
into that some more. But it's, you know, it's basically a feeling of unworthiness or that you're not good enough. It shows up a lot of times in professional settings, maybe in the workplace where you're not feeling, you're feeling less than, even despite any fancy letters after your name or credentials or expertise and experience you might have, you can still have that kind of underlying, I'm not good enough feeling, or almost feeling like a phony.
Feeling like a phony.
Ooh. So what stirs up in you that, Mark?
Well, that's what I think of when I think of imposter syndrome or imposter phenomenon is, you know, they're going to figure it out. Mm. You know, like, I'm not supposed to be here.
Mm.
I'm a fraud. Yeah. Phony.
It's so interesting. Is it a motivator to like work harder, do you think?
Like fear of failure?
Well, you know, if I'm not good enough, I'm going to get kicked out of my protective group. If I get kicked out of my protective group, I'm going to be lunch. So I have to be sure that I'm performing, that I'm contributing, that I'm just not fooling people. I don't know. It just occurs to me.
I think it has a lot to do with, too, like I was thinking about this earlier today and kind of in light of the trauma course being released soon. And I think given, you know, your experiences maybe growing up, how you were maybe treated by parents or caregivers can maybe play a factor into how, you know, if you were never made to feel good enough as a kid, or if you had really high expectations put on you, I think that it can show up then in adulthood, mm-hmm. in not really having that kind of confidence.
Mm.
But I think a fear of failure definitely is a factor as well.
I must admit, I absolutely am continually influenced by imposter syndrome. One of the things I say is, you know, imposter begins with I am. And of course, the I am approach is something that I've developed. But it's interesting because even though, you know, I had a difficult childhood in the sense that my parents were not happy, I was not seen as anything other than sort of really maybe more valuable than I ever have seen myself. I mean, remember, I was, you know, on Zoom. I was the first Zoom kid, won 2 Emmy Awards. I mean, I was... you know, very popular in that way. And yet I always thought, you know, anyone could do this. Why are they picking me? You know, anyone can do it. So I'm fascinated by this because I do think it's really is, as you say, a part of who we are as human beings, this imposter idea. Do you think, I mean, could it be protective as well? Saying, well, it's, you know, if I'm really not that good, then people won't target me to try to bring me down.
Or yeah. Set yourself up for failure.
Or
right?
set yourself up for failure. So, you know, again, it's an I am, right? It's the best we can do is to think that we're not good enough. And yet it is so pervasive, it's got to have some adaptive significance in us as human beings. Why would it have survived so long as a behavior and as a thought? I'm just curious, what do you think?
Yeah, oh, I definitely think that can play a factor. And I want to go back to what you were just saying about yourself, if you wouldn't mind.
All right.
Because one of the things that can contribute to imposter syndrome, I'm going to give you a scenario, and I'm not saying this is what happened in your situation or your lived experience, but if, because you were young, very young when you experienced that kind of popularity, shall we say, and what happened, did that continue, or what happened when that kind, did that end at a certain time? Because I'm wondering how that felt then, because what I'm getting at is sometimes I think when you've had success in childhood, and then all of a sudden, let's say academic success in like elementary school, you're the top of the class, middle school, top of the class, maybe even high school, you graduate valedictorian. Then you go off to college and all of a sudden now you're the little fish in the big pond, and you're not so, you're maybe now you're really struggling in whatever courses you're taking, and that imposter syndrome starts to creep up there. So I'm wondering, as you were just saying that, I thought,
No, that was not the experience. Again, I think that, you know, I believe in God. I believe in some spiritual entity. And I really think that Zoom, not Zoom, the platform we're on now, but the TV show came at a time that I really needed it. My family was exploding. I mean, my parents were in the midst of a divorce. It was awful. And this gave me something to do after school. So I didn't need to go home right away. But it has, that fame, if you will, that recognition has continued since then for 50 years. When my kids were going to school, they would come home and say, you know, I just happened to mention to my friend, you know, that, you know, my dad was on Zoom. And their mom came in and said, what? Your dad was Joe? Oh, my God, I loved him. He was my first crush. And I've had, with frequency, this would happen, even now, you know, when I say this. So I don't think it was that I necessarily was brought down a peg, but I did decide I didn't want to go into theater after a while, because it wasn't as fulfilling as I thought it would be. But it has had, just as with you, it's had such an influence on my life. And I now, I mean, that's what Drugstory Theater is. Drugstory Theater is taking my theater experience, combining it with my work with adolescents and addiction, and saying, here's another modality that you can use that will be way better than any drug, because the drugs give you pleasure, but giving to someone else gives you happiness. And that's just a different chemical. But the imposter idea, I mean, Mark, you struggle with this as well, right?
I do. And I think, as Dr. MC said, we all do. It's a spectrum, I would imagine. You know, at what point are you aware of it? And or I would imagine that there are some people that really don't, and they're very at peace at their stage of life and in the present moment that they're at. Yet some of us are eternally searching for that purpose too, right? So it's like, who am I and where do I fit into this? And is that a grandiose thought, or is that something I can accomplish?
You know, in my case, is it trandiose?
Right. Is it achievable? Is that realistic, or do I need to come back to earth?
Yeah. I don't know. I think there's a lot that can play into it. And I also think it's kind of wild that the three of us on this Zoom call, not to be confused with your Zoom,
right,
but we got a PhD, a lawyer, and are you an MD or PhD?
An MD.
Yeah, we got an MD, a PhD. We have like a lot of education and advanced credentials and fancy letters after our names,
right,
three of us here, but yet we're all saying that we've experienced that. Whereas somebody who maybe doesn't have that would assume that we wouldn't.
Yeah.
Right. So what happens when you assume?
Yes, that's so true. So do you think that it's sort of then a feigned humility? Like, well, if I don't have imposter syndrome, then I become too egotistical and too full of myself. And, you know, I can then not be who I want to be because I'm, you know, so good.
That it holds you back, or it isolates you.
That being in so involved in my success isolates one, because all of a sudden one's on this self-erected pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
I am just the best thing ever. I mean, you've been around people like that, right? It's like,
100%.
I do not want to be around people like that. So I wonder whether imposter syndrome also has that aspect to it, that view, you know, that self, it's not always self-deprecation, but humility, saying, you know, I'm no better than anyone else. But that's not quite what captures imposter syndrome. There's a different feeling to it with imposter syndrome. One of the things that I'm most grateful for, though, is that my sponsors, our sponsors, don't, I think, feel that. They know what they do. They know their value. There's no imposter syndrome there. So those are the people that I want to hear from right now. Larry, let's take a break. We'll be right back with the Dr. Joe Show.
Hey, folks, welcome back. So any thoughts? Do you listen to other podcasts? Do you see how they do the sponsors? Is there a way that they're utilizing sponsors that you enjoy or you don't enjoy? I listen to Smartless, and I really enjoy how the co-hosts share the voiceover for the product or service. It's really funny for the most part, but it's unique. It's them really endorsing. Does that work? What do you think?
And we're back with the Dr. Joe Show right here, right now, live on WATD 95.9 with Dr. MC and Dr. Joe talking about imposter syndrome. We were digging in before the break right there.
And Counselor Styles. I mean, you know, Dr. MC was talking about this, you know, off air, you know, PhD, MD, DOJ. I mean, it's like, you know, what, why would we have this at all? But no, I didn't mean to cut you off, Mark. You were...
No, well, we were starting to talk right before the break. You were analyzing it. Is it a humility factor? Mm-hmm. And we're saying it's not really the same feeling. And we started talking off air that there's a fear component to it, mm-hmm. as well. And that fear component adds to the syndrome, if you will, where humility is, you know, more stoic and at peace and present feeling, where imposter is, am I going to be found out?
Yeah. Yeah. Am I going to be found out? And off air also, Dr. MC, you were talking about self-esteem versus imposter syndrome and low self-esteem. Where do your thoughts go with that?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think imposter syndrome is something that shows up more maybe when we think about like the workplace and like the career domain of life and goals and that kind of stuff, those kind of aspects. And I mean, there is an underpinning of self-esteem with that though too, right? And I feel like self-esteem though is something we is more maybe shows up in other aspects of our lives.
Hmm.
And then we were talking about before, Dr. Joe, when we were saying, you know, does somebody isolate themselves? You know, I think that one of the ways to help fight back with imposter syndrome is to really lean on your community. So somebody that is kind of so high up on their high horse that they've, you know, isolated themselves aren't going to have that network and that community of people to help lean on.
Yeah, and it actually leaves them more vulnerable. Hmm. I mean, think about, you know, if you're a king or an emperor, do you ever really sleep well? I mean, you're always wondering that you know, somebody's going to come and try to assassinate me because I've got so much power. And you know, in Outsmarting Anger, you know, one of my books about respect, there's envy that leads to anger. Somebody's got more than me. I want to bring them down. And there's suspicion that somebody is going to bring me down because they think I have more than them. And these two, you know, feelings of anger and suspicion and worry, maybe that is part of imposter syndrome, is if I'm too elevated, then other people will see me as an isolated target. So is imposter syndrome protective in that way to sort of ground you and bring you down to earth? I mean, you know, I used to have bruises on my ankles because my wife, Carol, would say, get back down to earth, Joe Schrand. You know, stop going up there. Get back, you know. But I don't know. Is imposter syndrome the same as low self-esteem? I don't think so. I think there's something really different about it.
No, I agree that there's something different, and it feels different too. Like, I don't ever consider myself lacking in self-esteem, but I definitely felt imposter syndrome. And I think, you know, as I'm thinking about, you know, the trauma course, going back to the trauma course, and I'll speak from my own personal lived experience. I did experience some adverse childhood experiences growing up. And Dr. Joe, you would mention the ACEs earlier, which is a way we measure trauma in children up until the age 18. If you experience a series of these events, could potentially impact your health outcomes as an adult. So we don't need to get too much more into that. But one of the things, you know, growing up with an abusive father, he would a very unrealistic expectations of perfectionism. And I know that shows up in how I achieve goals and kind of that relentless pursuit of advanced education, like going all the way to a PhD, you know, and continuing to strive for things. Like, I think that, like, for me, that's some of how my imposter syndrome shows up, like the fear of, you know, not being good enough. Not being good enough by whose standards? I mean, anybody else from the outside looking in would think that she's got it all under control. She's in the business. She's doing this. She's got all these advanced. She must be so confident. And imposter syndrome would never enter the chat. But yet, and you know, it definitely doesn't rule my life. But there are times where it has perked up a little, and I feel like that can go back to maybe some early childhood experiences where like anything less than an A was not tolerated. Or if I had one time I had a situation where I broke my front tooth at Canobie Lake Park. It was not, I hate amusement parks ever since, but it was, I'm not going to lie, it was a rather traumatic event. And when I got home, my dad's reaction was very strong. And I believe his exact words were, "My little girl isn't perfect anymore." So like that, like what did that like mean? I was like 8 or 9 at the time. And so, you know, where does that imprint on my, you know, growing up and during those developmental years, like how does that continue to show up in the workplace? How does that continue to show up when I was a student? How does that, you know what I mean? How will it continue to show up in another 10 years from now?
Yeah. And I think the extension of that is saying, if I don't succeed, then my dad was right.
Hmm.
Then I am not worthy. And I really shouldn't be able to do all these things because he was right. And I know I see that a lot in the people that I work with where, you know, they've been traumatized. I mean, we see this so much in folks who've suffered real, you know, significant trauma and they have post-traumatic stress. One of the things they do is blame themselves.
Mm. Right.
It must have been my fault, which is the defense against being powerless, the most difficult emotion for a human being to tolerate, being powerless, because millions of years ago, you were powerless, you were lunch.
Yeah.
So we defend against it by pretending could have done something. And I think part of it, where this takes me, is the imposter syndrome for me is I worry I could hurt people. If the I am is wrong, and people are believing it, I could really hurt people.
Hmm.
Because they are embracing something that may not be right. I mean, I have a lot of faith in the I am approach and that people are good and that we want to feel valued. But we have so much stress and pain and anger in the world. How do you then say to other people, you know, that's the best that person can do?
Mm.
Is be the abuser, is be the aggressor. How do we come to terms with that? So that, I think, is part of my personal struggle. as I say, you know, imposter begins with I am.
But how are you going to hurt somebody?
By making
by them relying on the law, the facts of the I am, how could they, like, in what scenario could someone be harmed by blindly believing in the approach?
I think it's difficult for people to be able to both stand up for themselves when somebody is hurting them and bullying them, and at the same time wonder why is the best that person can do to feel valuable is to make me feel less valuable. We work a lot with kids who've been suicidal because they've been bullied. And what we try to tell them is, you know, there's nothing wrong with you. What's going on with that bully's I am? That the only way they can feel valuable is to put you down? What's going on in their home domain, their social domain, their biological, their IC domain? But I don't want them to then go back to school and necessarily challenge a bully.
But you haven't told them to do that. Like, that's not part of the I am.
No, it's not.
So let's dig at this a little deeper.
Dr. Joe gets therapy on it.
Lie down, Dr. Joe. How was your relationship with your mother?
Right.
But let's really dig into this. Is it more about the science of it? The peer review of it, the law of it, because what you've done is you've uncovered a truth, a law. And are there critics? Are there people that will challenge what you've uncovered and simplified for people? Sure. Is that what is causing you to hesitate? Is what they, who, them, those might say or criticize about this approach?
Well, I certainly don't want to challenge our sponsors.
Ha ha! Saved by the bell.
Yeah, you bet, baby. So without challenging our sponsors, we'll take a commercial break. We'll be right back with the Dr. Joe Show. Take it away, Larry.
Hey, welcome back. And again, we're super grateful for you listening to the Dr. Joe Show. If you have anyone that you think might be a good sponsor, shoot us an email at drjoepodcast@gmail.com. drjoepodcast@gmail.com. Give us your thoughts about the show, too. We're wondering, are we talking to the trees or are people really gaining value in this? Please let us know. Thank you again and enjoy the rest of the show.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Dr. Joe Show, where Dr. Joe was on the hot seat right in time. We're here with Dr. MC, and we're talking about the imposter phenomenon, the imposter syndrome, and we're going to keep working through this so that everybody can be as vulnerable as possible and put out every idea or thought in the world without fear.
Yeah. I mean, again, off air, we were talking a lot about this and the different nuances of imposter syndrome and what happens when you have an idea and other people say, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, Dr. MC, has that ever happened to you? I mean, you have, as we were talking about off air, you know, the credibility to create a trauma-informed program for teachers to learn how to help their kids.
Yeah.
And you're putting it out there.
Yeah. Yeah, and putting myself out there in a lot of ways. I have to say, no, nobody told me that I shouldn't do it. Not yet, anyway. And also, you know, I think about when we were talking about the dance breaks earlier and the, you know, putting myself out there on Zoom as a plus size woman, as a, you know, teaching a little dance class and getting people up and motivated. Also, you know, that felt very vulnerable and kind of, but also powerful because my body was craving that return to dance. And so it almost feels a little, rebellious to reclaim a small space in that world for myself on my terms. So I think if I had let any outside voices, and there really weren't any, nobody told me not to do it, but if there had been and I had let those influence me, then that would have been, or if somebody now was like, what's this heavy woman know about dance, teaching dance, what kind of credentials does she have? Or, you know what I mean? If somebody was to say that now, it's like, okay, well, I'm not stopping because of one hater or even multiple haters. But those types of things can obviously stop us or prevent us from even starting something.
Yeah. And that's a little different, right, than imposter syndrome. That's that fear to the IC domain. Remember, the IC is, how do I see myself? How do I think other people see me? It's theory of mind. We're interested in what other people think or feel about us. What if they don't see us as valuable?
What if they reject what we're doing?
You know, so I might as well preempt it. How many times have we seen that in our therapy sessions with people who self-sabotage, as we're talking about, you know? Yeah. I'm going to sabotage this relationship before somebody rejects me.
Right.
I'm going to do it so at least I'm in control of it. And you work with people and go, why would you want to do that? I mean, if it's going to happen, it's the other person's I am. I mean, the best they can do. But I will tell you, I can't remember exactly who it was, but I was giving a conference at a Harvard writers teaching thing where Julie Silver every year would put on this conference about how to help people write self-help books and memoirs. And I was one of the speakers and I was talking about the I am. And when I got off stage, a professor sitting next to me said, you cannot tell me that people are always doing the best they can. There's just no way that that can be real. And I thought about it, but I thought, well, that's his I am. Right. You know, right? The best he can do is to think this can't be real. But it's a fascinating phenomenon. You know, and I do think that everybody experiences it at some point in some small way. Not just am I good enough, am I going to be uncovered? Am I going to be discovered that I'm just a phony? I mean, look what happens to people who are uncovered when they're phonies. I'm thinking Bernie Madoff, right? This guy probably didn't have imposter syndrome, but he fooled people into thinking he was something. Hmm. And it cost people their livelihood, their billions of dollars. So I'm not sure is that part of the defense against being successful? Is imposter syndrome a way for us to sort of rein ourselves in every now and then and say, hey, just think this one through. What would this really mean if you are as successful as other people see you? You know. Mark, thoughts on that?
Well, then you're protecting the downside of the risk, right? So if I don't risk it, then I'm not going to have the chance of failing. Yeah. So I'm just not going to do it.
Certainly something. Go on.
Different. I think that's different, right? Because if we're thinking about, I think there's a definitely a protective factor, maybe underlying, maybe not wanting the spotlight shined on you specifically, but I'm thinking about, you know, the inability to, or like downplaying your achievements. Like if somebody's like, oh my God, like I saw your article in ASCD, said leadership on the front cover, and that was so amazing. And it's like, yeah, no, it was no big deal. Mm-hmm. And just kind of like fluffing up. Well, like it is a big deal. And like I'm definitely guilty of stuff like that, but not really taking a step back and being like, yeah, that is a big deal. And go me for doing that. And I think, you know, I think through my self-care work, I've done a lot of this kind of exploration of the internal chatter and quieting some of those internal voices that can be super judgy, and taking that step back to be like, no, that was amazing. Like that was cool. But actually allowing yourself to feel those feelings, I think we numb out a lot of times and just kind of go through the motions and don't really allow ourselves to feel. So I think imposter syndrome plays into stuff like that. And then it certainly can be, you know, that kind of sabotaging your own success and protecting yourself.
So with that in mind, I want to come to the two truths of the I am, right? Because the four domains interact, the home, social, biological, I see. Because they interact, a small change in any domain can have a big effect. We don't have to change everything. So I'm wondering, following what you're just talking about, Dr. MC, what small change can you recommend to our listeners based on our topic for tonight?
Reminding ourselves that we're doing better than we think we are. We're probably overqualified for the jobs that we're doing. And then maybe it's okay now and again to give yourself a pat on the back or even a round of applause, because being human means that you'll experience setbacks and challenges and failures. But then there's all the good stuff that comes with it too. So go easy on yourself and don't be afraid to celebrate your wins.
And that is, you know, your thesis of self-care.
Right.
I mean, it's okay. That's how you got to take care of yourself.
Not selfish. It's self-preservation.
Right. Not selfish. So the second truth of the I am is everyone's got one. Everyone is interested through their IC domain what you think or feel about them, which will have an effect on their biological domain. Because, you know, it feels different when you feel respected or disrespected. You're part of someone's home or social domain. So the second truth, you control no one, you influence everyone. You get to choose the kind of influence you want to be. Dr. Teresa Melito Connors, author, self-help guru, what kind of influence do you want to be?
It's late, Dr. Joe, for these deep questions. No, I'm just kidding. I want to influence people to understand the importance of caring for themselves and that self-care is other care. I work with a lot of helping professionals, educators, and I think they're helping professionals are rock stars. Educators are, I don't mean this to be cliche, they're superheroes. They should be paid like professional athletes, hands down, no questions asked. So I want people to understand the value and the importance of the work that they're doing in any field, but specifically helping professionals, and understand that they need to care for themselves in order to care for others, and that it's not selfish, and that it's something they need to do so they show up as the best version of themselves to influence the students that they're working with and the communities that they're building.
And you've been modeling that.
I try.
All through.
See, there I am downplaying it a little. Yes, I do.
Right, exactly, right? You see, it just comes so natural to us, right? Just to downplay it, you know?
Oh, shocks.
Yeah. That was no big deal. Yeah.
Well, this has been a wonderful discussion. Audience, you know, you can send emails and text messages and do everything. And Dr. MC, how do people find you? You have social media?
Yeah, of course. My social media, I'm most active on Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn at Dr. MC Self Care. And it's MC for Melito Connors, not MC like the lead character in the musical Cabaret. And which, but it does play off that. See, there's another layer of why I named the business Dr. MC's Self-Care Cabaret. Anyway, side note. And my website is drmcselfcare.com. And there's lots of content. We're always putting out different resources for folks. There's a series of professional development workshops. My first online course, dance break. Come dance with me for 30 minutes after school. Yeah.
That's great. Thank you so much for coming back on the show. Really enjoyed the discussion. Mark, we'll see you next week. Thanks, audience. You are not imposters.
Go, 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 go,